outside every village and town and even every city in Judah. There would have been an enclosure for sheep. In those days, the days of Jesus, there would not have been the paddocks with which we are familiar. Fields surrounded by fences to keep the sheep safe from wandering. In those days, the countryside was open, and the shepherds would lead their sheep out of the folds and into the countryside to graze there on the hillsides. And then at night they would bring them back again into the fold. And so each community would have an enclosure, perhaps more than one enclosure, depending on the number of flocks, the number of sheep. But more than one flock would be enclosed in this sheepfold. That is the picture to which Jesus is referring in the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John. And he reminds those who are listening to him that the shepherd enters through the gates into the fold to call for his sheep who would recognize his voice and follow him out. So even though there may be a number of different flocks within the one fold, the sheep knew the voice of their own shepherd. And when the shepherd called for his sheep, those sheep would come to him. It's a concept that we find difficult to appreciate, given that shepherds in New Zealand and in most Western countries use dogs to round up and drive the sheep wherever they want to go. Here, the shepherd would go ahead of the sheep, and the sheep would obediently follow the shepherd, listening to his voice and following in that direction. But there would be others who would be interested in the sheep. They would not be known by the sheep, nor by the gatekeeper who looked after the fold. And these others would climb in to the fold to steal, to kill, to destroy. Jesus uses this figure of speech, as John refers to it. If it was in the Synoptic Gospels, it would have been called a parable. But those who were listening to him didn't understand what he was saying to them. Do we understand? There are two contexts that we need to keep in mind if we are to understand what Jesus is getting at in this parable, in this figure of speech. We need to understand the Old Testament context that would undergird all that Jesus taught. They were the scriptures for all the teachers of Israel. And the context then for the idea of the shepherd and the sheep is found in passages like the one that we read earlier in the book of Ezekiel and in the 34th chapter. Certainly there are other passages in the Old Testament that warn against those who would seek to steal the sheep, to maim the sheep, to destroy the sheep. Even warnings against shepherds who did not fulfill their responsibilities properly. There are also other passages that refer to God as the shepherd of the sheep, like that which we sang from the 23rd Psalm. But probably Jesus had in mind specifically the passage in Ezekiel, where the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel and told him to prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Now, of course, he's not talking about those who went out of the towns and villages and cities of Israel and gathered together woolly sheep to take out to the hillsides. He's not talking about shepherds in the real sense of the term. It's an expression that is being used figuratively even by Ezekiel. The shepherds of Israel are the leaders of Israel. The shepherds of Israel are the teachers of Israel, are the ones who are responsible for caring for the people of Israel. And the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel to prophesy against these leaders of Israel. Ah, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding yourselves, should not shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. The weak you haven't strengthened, the sick you haven't healed, the injured you have not bound up, the strayed you have not brought back, the lost you have not sought. And with force and harshness you have ruled them. Strong words against the leaders of Israel. They failed to care. They fleeced rather than fed the sheep. But Ezekiel also speaks about another shepherd who was to come. Behold, says the Lord God, I myself will search for my sheep, and will seek them out as a shepherd seeks out his flock when he is among his sheep that have been scattered. So will I seek out my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they have been scattered. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries. I will feed them. I will protect them. I will seek the lost. I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured. I will strengthen the weak. I will feed them in justice. But he says more. God will come to them like a shepherd. But God will also raise up over them a shepherd. I will rescue my flock, he goes on to say. They shall no longer be a prey. And I will set up over them one shepherd, my servant David. And he shall feed them. He shall feed them and be their shepherd. Now, of course, David has long since been dead and buried. Ezekiel came hundreds of years after David. And yet, he speaks of David being a shepherd. And of course, we understand this to be the promised seed of David, the one who would reign on David's throne eternally. I, the Lord God, will be their God, and my servant David shall be prince among them. I am the Lord, I have spoken, says the living God. And so, a shepherd is coming to Israel. A good shepherd who will care for the sheep. He will not rob them. He will not scatter them. But he will bind them up. He will seek them out. He will rescue them. And so in the book of Ezekiel, and in the 34th chapter, we have this contrast between the shepherds of Israel, who take advantage of their position to elevate themselves and comfort themselves and prosper themselves at the cost of the sheep. Contrasted with the good shepherd, who will exert himself on behalf of the sheep for the good of the sheep. There's the wider context to which Jesus is speaking. But there's an immediate context to this passage as well, isn't there? It's the context, of course, of the healing of a man born blind. A man who was questioned, interrogated by the Jewish leaders, and ultimately thrown out of the synagogue. The religious leaders, whose task was to teach, to guide, to protect, to nurture, to heal, to strengthen. And what do? They cast out a sheep from the fold, as it were. You see, Jesus does three things in this figure of speech. He demonstrates three truths. The first is that the Jewish leaders of his day are identified with the leaders of Ezekiel's day. They are shepherds who fleece the sheep rather than feeding the sheep. They are thieves and robbers. It's as though they have climbed over the wall and entered the sheepfold without concern for the sheep, without tenderness towards the sheep, but for their own ends, for their own comfort, for their own pleasure, for their own elevation. They have no real interest in the welfare of the sheep. It's evidenced in their treatment of this blind man. In the second place, Jesus identifies the nation of Israel with the sheepfold. But you will observe that not all who are in the fold belong to this shepherd. The gatekeeper opens to him, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. His own sheep hear him and recognize his voice and follow him. All the sheep hear him, but not all the sheep recognize his voice. Not all the sheep follow him. Jesus is highlighting an important fact that not all who are born Israelites are real Israelites. Not all who are descended from Abraham are real children of Abraham. That is the point that he is making. The sheepfold is Israel. But not all the sheep in the fold belong to this shepherd. Not all of them hear his voice. It's borne out by the immediate context, isn't it? Jesus teaches the people. And one man on being asked, do you believe in the Son of Man, and being told that Jesus is the Son of Man, i.e. Jesus is the Messiah, says, I believe, bow down and worship him. And Jesus explains to him, I came into this world that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees heard him say these things and said to him, are we also blind? Jesus is pointing out to them that there are within the nation of Israel those who are blind to the truth and those whose eyes are opened to the truth. And in this figure of speech then, he demonstrates that the mass of sheep in the sheepfold don't all belong to the shepherd. There was one man born blind who recognized Jesus' messiahship, but many did not. And in the third place, Jesus identifies himself with the shepherd. In this figure of speech, it's implicit rather than explicit. He doesn't actually say that he is the shepherd. He presents to them a picture, but of course, implicit in all that he is saying, when we take into account the wider context and the immediate context, is that he is the shepherd who calls for his sheep, who hear his voice and follow him out of the sheepfold. Jesus has, after all, repeatedly identified himself as the Messiah. His claims to be living water, his claims to be the light of the world, were claims to messiahship. And of course, the Old Testament describes the Messiah as a shepherd. The seed of David was the shepherd whom God would send to his people. And furthermore, we have within this figure of speech and the fulfillment of the Messiah as shepherd, the mingling ideas of both God a shepherd and Messiah a shepherd. Therefore, Messiah is God. God is Messiah. Which is another teaching that has repeatedly arisen in this gospel already. God is the shepherd, according to Ezekiel, and the Son of David is the shepherd, according to Ezekiel. Jesus claims to be the shepherd. He claims to be Messiah. Jesus also claims to be God. He claims to be the shepherd, God. And the blindness of these Pharisees then is emphasized by their lack of comprehension of what Jesus is saying. They don't make the connection between the Old Testament pictures of the shepherd and sheep and their own situation. And so Jesus becomes even more explicit as he continues to teach them. And there are three ideas that Jesus has introduced in the figure of speech that he's given in this parable in the opening five verses of this chapter, which he picks up on again, but these aren't explanations of the figure of speech. Rather, he extends and gives an expansion of these ideas. Or to put it another way, he uses the same pictures but gives them slightly different meanings, in order to enrich their understanding of what the shepherd and sheep and sheepfold mean. So there are three ideas, three pictures that he pulls from the parable and expands on in these following verses from verse 7 through verse 18. In the first place, he picks up this idea of the door that he's already spoken of. He's already said, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. Previously, in the parable, the door was controlled by the keeper, and the fold housed different flocks, led by different shepherds. Here, Jesus is the door. Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus is the door. And the fold is home to one flock. All the sheep in the fold belong to this one shepherd. Now, it was quite common that the door of the sheepfold wouldn't be a physical gateway, but rather a shepherd, or the shepherds in turn, would lie across the opening and act as the door to the fold. And it's possible that Jesus is using that familiar scene to explain his own position. I am the door of the sheep. Jesus is the one who offers security to the sheep. He is the one who also gives them nourishment. This is contrary to the thieves and the robbers who break in and steal and destroy. This is over against the religious leaders of Jesus' own day, who have failed to fulfill their responsibilities and have destroyed and scattered the flock for their own ends, who have no real concern for the flock. Jesus offers real security and true nourishment. Indeed, Jesus is the fulfillment of Moses' prayer in Numbers chapter 27, where at the end of his own ministry and leadership of Israel, he prays concerning the successor. In verses 15 and following, Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation, who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be as sheep that have no shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Jesus, a man in whom is the Spirit." Now, I know if you were following along in your Bible, it didn't say Jesus there, did it? Well, yes, it did. Because Joshua is the Hebrew, for which Jesus is the Greek. It's the same name. And Joshua was a type of Jesus, a picture of Jesus, a symbol of Jesus in many ways. And this, in reality, this prayer of Moses's, while in the immediate context, is answered by the supply of Joshua, ultimately, this prayer of Moses is answered by the giving of Jesus. Jesus is the one who, as he himself says, will go in and out to provide pasture and security. He is the only way to true abundant life. That is his claim. I am the door. I am the only way. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. I came that the sheep may have life and have it abundantly. All the ones who came before me, he says, are thieves and robbers. Now, he's narrowing this down from the figure of speech language, which was pointed to the religious leaders of the day. Here it would seem that he's speaking more specifically of those who proclaimed themselves as deliverers of Israel. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, and the sheep didn't listen to them. I am the door. Everyone else who came proclaiming to be the Messiah were just out for themselves, to promote themselves. But I am the true Messiah. And if anyone enters by me, he will be saved. I will give him life, an abundant life. Jesus is the door to the sheepfold. But Jesus also picks out from his figure of speech the idea of the shepherd. Previously, of course, in that figure of speech, the shepherd is contrasted with the thieves and robbers. Here, in Jesus' extended discourse, his expansion of his theme, Jesus presents himself as a good shepherd, in contrast to a hired hand. So remember, he's not explaining the parable. He's picking out ideas from the parable and taking them much further. In the main, he applies them in quite different ways from the parable itself. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. The hired hand is not necessarily evil. The hired hand doesn't set out to kill, maim, and destroy the sheep. The hired hand is there to care for the sheep, but he doesn't have a commitment to the sheep that will cause him to risk his life. A shepherd who owns the sheep will risk his life for the sheep. You think of David, King David. In the Old Testament, he grew up tending his father's sheep, his own inheritance, you could say. He had an interest in the productivity of the flock, in their safety and nurture. And David was ready to risk his life for the sheep. When a bear came, when a lion came, he was willing to fight to keep the sheep safe. Whereas a hired hand wouldn't risk his skin for the skin of sheep. They're just animals. Why should a human life be forfeit for the sake of animals? Jesus isn't saying that the behavior of the hired hand is wrong necessarily. but he's using it to contrast with himself. I am the good shepherd. I'm willing not just to risk my life for the sheep. Not like David was willing to risk his life for his father's sheep. But purposefully to lay down his life for the sheep. You know, this isn't some empty display of devotion to the flock that leaves the sheep ultimately exposed. A shepherd standing before a lion and being torn apart by the beast, so that the lion can then go and rampage among the flock and scatter it and kill it. This isn't some vain risking of life for the safety and well-being of the sheep that ultimately leaves them with no safety. No, the sheep are in grave danger, is the picture that's presented to us, and the shepherd laying his life down implicitly frees the sheep from the danger, removes them from the danger. He lays his life down so that the sheep will be safe. He tells us that there's an intimacy of relationship between the good shepherd and the sheep who know his voice. There's a union here. Just as he is in intimate union with the Father, so his sheep are in intimate union with him. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, he says. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. And so Paul is able to say in Ephesians 5 and verse 25, Christ loved the flock. Well, he doesn't say flock, he actually says church. But you get the parallel. Christ loved the flock and gave himself for her. Voluntarily laid down his life for the sheep whom he loved. And this leads us then to the third idea that is drawn out of the figure of speech but is expanded and extended, and that is the sheep who hear his voice, who know his voice. In other words, the shepherd's own sheep. The gatekeeper opens to him, the sheep hear his voice, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Previously, the shepherd called his own sheep from among all the sheep in the fold. As already indicated, Jesus was demonstrating that not all who call themselves Israel were true Israel. Jesus would call some Jews out of Judaism to be his followers. But here, Jesus brings to one fold those who are his sheep from various locations. He says in verse 16, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. By his laying down of his life and taking it up again, Jesus brings together all of his sheep, whether Jews or Gentiles. And he brings them all together, not as two separate flocks, but as one flock in one fold, and himself as the one shepherd, protecting and nourishing them all. The love of the Father for the Son, Jesus says, is based upon this great act of salvation. It's based upon the Son's total obedience to the Father, even to death, to the laying down of his life on the cross. That is not to say that the Father did not love the Son until he gave his life on the cross. For Jesus has already been able to say, I always do the Father's will. But the love of the Father for the Son is intimately and inextricably bound up with the whole work of redemption. From its initial conception before time began, through to its ultimate completion when in the new heavens and the new earth the Son will reign over a pure and perfect people. And just as the Father loves the Son, so the Son loves his sheep and displays his love for the sheep by his own voluntary self-sacrifice. No one took the life of Jesus. Yes, Roman soldiers forced him up a hillside outside Jerusalem. Yes, Roman soldiers hammered nails through his hands and feet and raised him on a cross to die. Yes, it was a Roman spear that was thrust through his side, but no man killed Jesus. He laid down his life voluntarily as a loving sacrifice for his sheep to free them from the danger that faced them. Now, John's readers have been challenged by the claims of Christ. Those that listened to Jesus were challenged by his claims, and there was a division among them. Many of them said, he's got a demon, he's insane, don't bother listening to him. Others said, well, these don't sound like the words of a demon. And after all, can a demon open the eyes of the blind? John asks his readers, whether of the first century or of the 21st century, what do you think about the claims of Jesus? Does he have a demon? Could John's readers discern the true nature of Jesus' ministry? Could they see he is the shepherd promised by God to Ezekiel? That he is the Messiah. That he is the promised deliverer. Have you discerned that truth? What do you make of Jesus? Have you heard his voice calling? And are you following him?